All right, the Shilling Show here on a Turbo Tuesday edition. It's always a pleasure to welcome David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management, online muratahonmoney.com. Today's topic, the failure of government and living in a socialist country. We kind of started on this last time, but there's so much more to talk about. So, David, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so I'm going to ask you this question, and it's probably a nuanced answer, but I think it's more and more feeling like we're living in a socialist country here in America. We're hearing about these huge tax increases or essentially seizures of personal property and personal freedoms. So where are we on the scale?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The Heritage Foundation evaluates every country in the world every year for their economic freedom, and we use those indicators in our own investment strategy because we will only invest in countries that are at least as free as the United States. And the United States has fallen in recent years. The falling really began in 2008. And I wrote an article in 2008, in November of 2008, right before Election Day, called The Assault on Free Markets, where I kind of outlined where I thought the country was heading and where I thought the problems were. And how much, you know, the idea of being fair was really dividing the country between the haves and the have-nots, and really saying that the haves had a deep problem, and they were all evil, and they were all needed to be corrected. And in 2008, the Freedom Index by the Heritage Foundation was 81.2. It's on a scale from 0 to 100. And 81.2 put us firmly in the most free countries in the world, the freest section. And the next section down is the mostly free. That's from 70 to 80. And we've fallen from 81.2 down to 74.8. This is the worst score we've ever had on the Freedom Index.
This is very, very disturbing. And I would just remind people there's no coincidence to the fact that this this slide began in 2008, which was the election of Barack Obama and Biden and the fundamental transformation of America, which was proudly proclaimed.
Yeah. And when you look at 2008 and 2009 and 2010, 2010, we really dropped off. That was, you know, cash for clunkers, the GM bailout, Obamacare, all that stuff got put in. And all that made our country less free. And all of the price increases that you've seen in healthcare coverage have really come out of that era of having Obamacare put in place. You can't do anything about pre-existing conditions, and you just have to insure people regardless. And what it's done is that people have had an on-again, off-again, you know, relationship with healthcare insurance simply because now they can not have healthcare insurance, mm-hmm. and then they can just get it with no pre-existing conditions not covered.
And yet this was promised to us by Barack Obama, Tom Perriello, and all the other Democrats who voted for it, that this was going to lower our costs, that we were going to save money. This was going to be making the market more efficient. And they had these marketplaces that were supposed to promote competition and bring prices down. A whole pack of lies. It never came true. And yet I don't hear anybody even mentioning that anymore.
No, it's along about the same time we had the Dodd-Frank legislation and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac legislation, you know, which was, you know, you had Barney Franks defending all the lending practices and then turning around and then criticizing the lending practices. It was sort of ridiculous the way to see he was going after people for his own defense of their policies.
So what are the hallmarks for people of living in a socialist country? How can we tell? Because, again, I think there's a lot of propaganda in this country that we're just like a compassionate capitalism or something.
Yeah, you know, we've seen recently the fact, you know, you just had your guest on and he was talking about government transparency. Yeah. You know, a step before that is government accessibility. And we're seeing now that the government is inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
The IRS won't return their phone calls. They send out letters and say to call a number, and you call that number and they say, we're busy. We're so busy today, we can't handle it. Try again tomorrow. And you can call at any time of the day and for weeks on end every day, and they'll always say, we're not handling phone calls right now. Then they turn around and they fine nonprofits because they haven't filed when the nonprofit has three filing confirmations by the IRS. They just haven't gotten around to processing their filing confirmations. So they just send out their Dunning letters. And so the IRS is one that we have to deal with on a regular basis, and it's just very bad. Clients will say, well, I've got this thing and I can't get it resolved, and they keep sending these threatening letters, and I've sent my response in. I did that, you know, 3 months ago, and they're not responding. And they just say, well, that's just the way things are. And so ultimately they'll get around to it when they get around to it. But in the meantime, they continually send out these threatening letters. Or you look at Social Security and you just wanted to ask a decent question, or you want to file for Social Security, or you want to change your benefits. And again, they're not taking calls anymore. They're not dealing any kind of customer service. It's like, send in your form, hope it's correct, and we'll get to it whenever we get to it. Or you look at the post office, you know, and here the post office, you know, they just decide not to deliver mail for a week. And then they've got it all backed up in their system, and then they deliver mail whenever they feel like it, it feels like. And I think I'm still waiting for some mail that got caught sometime in January that they must have somewhere in their system. Or when we send out our quarterly letters, we send out a quarterly letter with a perfectly valid address, mm-hmm. and it comes back and it says that the address isn't valid. You know, we sent that letter out 3 times during the year and it got delivered, and this time it's just that's an invalid address. And then you ask for a refund, and try asking for a refund for the post office. That's a ridiculous thing. You know, and someone investigates it, and then we never get any refund for that postage.
You know, this is also outrageous, but I want to bring it down to the local level. When you talk about accessibility and accountability of government, you know, we have two local governing bodies, the Charlottesville City Council, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, that went into virtual mode, at least a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and are showing no signs of coming out. They hide and shield themselves. The same thing with the local school boards. They refuse to directly encounter the public, the constituents. And yet they're just pretending like this can go on forever. We had a call yesterday from someone who was very frustrated in trying to contact a member of the Board of Supervisors. If the meetings were open and the accessibility was there, you would walk right into the building and you would address the person directly. That's not possible now.
Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom is an incredible book. And chapter 10 is called Why the Worst Get on Top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most significant chapters I've ever read. It changes your view of government, and you understand why the worst possible people get on top, because what's required to implement their utopian view is to have authoritarian measures.
Mm-hmm.
So they're required to have authoritarian measures, and they're required to have the means to do things that might go against their principles. But in order to implement their principles, that's what is required. And so, you know, I don't know that the government actually knows at this point how to end the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've put all these measures in place. They've put all this stuff in place. And I don't know if they know how to back out of that, or they know when the pandemic would end, because the pandemic is not going to end. We're going to continue to have the coronavirus for many years mm-hmm. going forward. And they don't know how to deal with that other than to continually try to lock everything down and make everything as safe as possible. But
quote unquote.
Right. But the science isn't keeping up with that, because, you know, I know people who've been triple vaxxed and mm-hmm. had the coronavirus 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a flu that's going on, and it's going to continue to go on that way. I'm not sure it was ever as dangerous as they made it out to be. And I'm not sure that any of their measures actually helped. You know, I mean, I've been vaxxed, and I had a vaccine reaction that wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not going to get a vaxxed again. I was double vaxxed, but I'm not going to get triple vaxxed, because I think the vaccine at that point was actually had more problems with it for my particular body. I mm-hmm. understand, you know, but you can't deny that there are cases like that as well. And then you've got all kinds of troubles that they're not willing to have a specific law to an individual person. They just have these general mandates across the boards, and they're willing to make one size fits all proclamations, and they don't know how to undo those.
And there's a lot of what I would call terror involved on the part of the government. I remember when all this thing came about, and in Albemarle County, the tyrants running the county said, well, we're going to mandate masks in local stores. And so they had these, what they're calling ambassadors coming out, essentially brown shirts or Stasi coming out to stores, taking pictures, trying to catch people. And this is terrorizing the constituents and the local business owners, to the point where it really does feel like we're in a socialist at best country, because the government has become tyrants.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It's very difficult to see government these days, and it's very difficult to know when we're going to get back to normal.
Let's go to the phones and say hello to Greg. Greg, you're on with David Murata, and thank you for waiting.
David, always appreciate you. I don't know if you ever heard of this guy now. I think his name's Klaus Schwab. And then you've got the computer guy. What's his name? I can't think of his name. Darn it.
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, yeah. So these guys, you know, are moving toward a situation where you'll own nothing and be happy. And I think that they're going to work through, they already are working through local governments to put the thumb on the masses, and they're working through the federal agencies to put the thumb on the masses, and they're working through corporate America to put the thumb on the masses. And they just think that they are smart enough to control us and make a good outcome, and I think artificial intelligence will be implemented. But we've got to fight this off. I think the shots were the very first dry run on this. But we've got to stand up at all costs, and I'll just get your opinion on what I just said.
Greg, thank you very much. David, go ahead.
I'll tell a funny story rather than responding. I had a client who dropped me a note and said, I heard this Schwab guy was you know, doing all this stuff, and it seems like a terrible plot, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. So he didn't want to house his money at Schwab. And I said, you know, Klaus Schwab and Charles Schwab are two different people, and I'm pretty sure that Charles Schwab would not have said the stuff that Klaus Schwab said.
Yeah, we need to differentiate there. David Morata is our guest here on The Shilling Show. If you have comments, questions, or challenges, 977-1070. There's a line open for you right now. Samantha stands by, and The Shilling Show into our final segment right after this. All right, The Shilling Show into our final segment for today with David Morata, Morata Wealth Management, and we're talking about living in a socialist country and Biden's failed plans. So I've got to ask you a question, and I'm going to follow it up with a little caveat. I don't want to spoil your answer here, but I want to ask you, what has been Joe Biden's best idea or best proposal, if you can come up with anything?
That's a hard question. You know, when Trump was in office, I kind of kept my mouth shut about politics because his politics were pretty good, and his instincts were pretty good, and his ideas were pretty good. He was much more abrasive in Twitter and things like that than I would be. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm trying to be more of a gentleman than that.
Yeah.
But Biden is just openly divisive when it comes to all the principles that I think about. He's way far leaning toward unions. That seems to be his MO. And he's trying to implement some very left-wing policies. And he pulled out of Afghanistan in a terrible way. So what has been his best attribute? He doesn't send a lot of stuff on Twitter.
We're in trouble if that's where we're at. But the reason I thought of that is I remember after the Obama presidency ended, and I had a huge sigh of relief, but I thought back on those years, and I thought, you know, there's not a single policy decision that I could think of, maybe there's something somewhere out there that I thought was good that he came up with. I couldn't think of anything that he did that I thought was a good thing for America. And so I think we're kind of in the same position with Joe Biden.
The lack of Twitter has been a reassurance to the country, and I think the country voted very narrowly for Joe Biden simply because he wasn't going to be Donald Trump, and he wasn't going to have a Twitter account, and he wasn't going to be saying all the mean things that Trump would say on Twitter. But in terms of policies, I don't think they voted for his policies, and I think they've turned now very much against those policies and said, that's not why we voted for you. You could stay in power if you would just be a normal president, but you're not trying to be a normal president. Mm-hmm. You're trying to legislate a bunch of stuff from the Oval Office.
I've got to ask you, because I'm hearing this concern, particularly for the economy, these huge tax increases, the padding pockets of government employees getting 6% raises while the rest of us are out here earning what we earned, you know, 10 years ago or less. And so people say, well, on a personal financial basis, how do I counter these socialist proposals? Are there things, actions that people can take to somehow protect themselves from this onslaught of socialism financially?
So the short answer to that is yes, that's what we do every day. And we are very good at navigating the tax code. We're very good at understanding the tremendous value of Roth conversions. In fact, I've got a class coming up at Ollie, which there's a few seats left in that class. So Ollie is Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And if you want to go there, it's a good way of hearing 4 weeks of me talking about what you need to do to prepare for retirement. in the Build Back Better bill, the proposal was to tax non-deductible basis of Roth conversion. It's kind of complex, but it's the what allows you to do a backdoor Roth at this point, because if you earn too much, they won't let you do a front door Roth. And it turns out I did the analysis, and the problem is every year money growing in a taxable account is it costs about 2% in terms of taxes. So you're getting taxed at 2% every single year simply because your account is going up. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that going up is simply inflation, and they're going to tax you on inflation. And inflation's now running at 7%. And at 7%, you get taxed 2% simply because it went up 7%. So so we're now getting all these taxes. Well, it turns out it's better to go ahead and put the money in a Roth and to immediately do the conversion, even if doing the conversion, they're going to tax your non-deductible basis you put in the Roth. So even if you put the money into a traditional IRA and you immediately do the conversion and you do the backdoor Roth anyway, even if they tax you on that, they're going to tax you at what, 20, 30, 40%. And if you have to pay 2% every single year, let's say you're at the 40% tax bracket, you have to pay 2% every year, in 20 years you get paid back. So that means if you're younger than 70, it's good to do a backdoor Roth, even if you get taxed for it. You know, so these are the kinds of proposals that the Democrats are trying to put in place, and they're not allowing some people to do these kinds of things. That's a small matter, and we think it's still a better idea to go ahead and do the Roth conversion. So getting money into a Roth is like the frictionless vacuum that we all learned about in high school physics. It simply moves the way it moves, and it's never taxed again. And doing a Roth is better than not doing a Roth, simply because we know what the tax rates are now. We have wide brackets from the Trump tax cuts. We know that the Trump tax cuts expire in 2026. So 2025 is the last year to get the good tax rates. That assumes that the Democrats do nothing, which we know that Congress is very good at doing nothing, even though they're trying to do an awful lot right now that's going to hurt it. But it's better to do the Roth conversion than not do the Roth conversion. And just ask yourself, what are taxes going to look like in the future? Are they going to be higher and lower? I don't know anyone who thinks they're going to be lower. Everyone thinks they're going to be higher. And even if taxes are exactly the same, Roth conversions are still advantageous. So when we do a tax analysis for our clients, we do it for all the different conversion plans that we can do. In other words, we take their taxes and we do their taxes every year in mock between this year and when they're 100. So we do them every year. And then we try stuff. And we can often try stuff. And in trying stuff, we can save millions of dollars for our clients simply because we understand how Roth conversions work. We understand how the tax code works. We've done very sophisticated analysis that we can do that. And that's the way that we save clients money.
David Morata, if people want to be in touch, if they want to sign up for the class at Ollie, or if they just want to talk to you about something, how can they reach you?
Yeah, MoratoOnMoney.com is our website. We've got an article there on the Ollie class that you can just click through, and it explains how you register for Ollie.
Fantastic. Always a great conversation. David Morata, thanks for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.